If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
That's my dad.
Hello!
Underpants?
That is hilarious.
Shut your mouth, dude. Rate and review this podcast or my daddy will go into a deep depression.
Going down business with Aaron Cliver.
Yeah.
Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. This is Aaron Cliber. Got a fun week this week. My guest is a longtime friend of Pittsburgh comedy. He's finally a dad. We're going to talk to Terry Jones in a minute. Swag. See what he say immediately. And then I would give him the double tap and salute. Our handshake. But before we get started, if you guys want to see me live this weekend, guys, I'm in Houston at the Houston Improv with John Witherspoon and some other places. I'll be coming to Cleveland. I'll be coming to, I don't even remember. Go to Aaron Cliber, you know, AaronCliber.com, you know, stuff like that. And my other podcast, if you like movies, me and Sean Collier, HandleTheTruthPodcast.com. We do real movie reviews for real. And shout out to one of our sponsors, Ignite Hospitality. If you're a comedian, entertainer, magician, juggler, yo-yoer, that's all people I know by name, by the way. Check out Ignite Hospitality because Adam at Ignite Hospitality barters hotel rooms for you very cheaply. It is amazing. I stayed in downtown Chicago 2 weeks ago in a $300 a night Hilton for $40 a night. That's what Adam does for you. It's amazing. I got a couple other things coming up that he's hooking me up with, amazingly cheap hotels. It's a little bit different than like Expedia and stuff like that. He'll explain everything to you, but trust me, it's worth checking out Ignite Hospitality. And yeah, that's about it. But we're going to get right into it with my friend Terry Jones. Hello.
Swag.
See, there it is.
What's going on, man?
Man, it's always funny when I do a podcast with someone I've known for a long time.
Yeah.
It's fun because it's fun to do an interview with someone that you don't know, like, you know, like you just know them. Like if you work a weekend with a comedian, it's like, oh, I get to know you and ask you questions, you know. But Terry and I mean, I've known Terry since I started stand-up.
Yeah.
When I started, you were the guy. So. You were one of the guys at the Improv working. And now Terry is, you're doing your second album.
It's actually my first album.
It is?
I had a DVD. The first project I did, yeah, you had a DVD. Was a DVD.
Well, it's this an album. Yeah. Yeah. But this is your second album, kind of.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
And if you're listening today, August 11th, he's headlining tonight at 10 p.m.
Yes.
At the Pittsburgh Improv, if you're from Pittsburgh, and also Sunday the 14th at 7 p.m.
Yep.
Terry Jones at the Pittsburgh Improv. You know, and Terry's really busy. It's rare you get to see him do a headline show in Pittsburgh that isn't a fundraiser out in the middle of nowhere for a little league team.
That's hilarious.
It's true.
Yo, it's that's the people, bookings, man.
You know how people are like, where can I see you? I'm like, an hour and a half away at a VFW raising money for firefighters.
In Johnstown.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, why aren't you at the Improv a lot anymore? And I'm like, because I want you to buy tickets when I headline.
Yeah.
That's why. Because it's funny because people don't get it. Like, when you headline, you want people to come and buy tickets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but then people are like, oh, I'll come see you when you're with Ralphie May.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. I was like, no. Don't. That ain't for me. Like, that's...
It's true, man, because I run into that issue where you know how, like, it upsets you as a comic where your friends will... Like, go see, like, a big-name headliner.
Don't even get me started.
You know, at 11 p.m. on a Thursday and pay $45 a ticket.
Don't even. Do you see my look I'm giving you?
Yes, that look is. And then they'll complain like, wait a second, you're doing a show at 8 p.m. on Thursday for $15? No. And it's like, oh, man.
Oh, no. I will have people that I've known for a long time, high school, college friends, and they will be like, oh, we want to come see you. And I'll be like, I am headlining. I'm doing 1 hour for free. I'll give you free tickets. And they'd be like, I don't know. That's pretty far for us. That's pretty far. And then the very next week, they'll pay $30 to come see Elijah Schlesinger. Yeah. And I'll see pictures on Instagram like, we're at the Improv. We got to meet Elijah Schlesinger. And I'm like, are you for real?
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
My favorite is this one. I know you got this one. Yo, I came out to support you. And it's like, no. I just happened to be opening for the person that you came to really support.
Yeah, right.
And you're thinking that you're supporting me supporting this person.
I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, that's comedy for you, though. It's a fun growth process, though. Can I admit.
But yeah, when I started coming to the Improv in around 2009, I did my first couple shows. Terry, I know you were going hard. You were like the young dude on the scene.
Yeah.
Killing it. And I know there's a story that this sounds kind of braggy, but I kind of remember it because I did my first show ever at Pittsburgh Cafe, and Matt Light was the host. And Matt told me this story. Yeah. It's my first show I ever did, and it was a show. You know, it's one of those shows where a comedian we know would get a bunch of young guys on, so he would bring people.
Yeah.
So it was that was my first show ever, and he was like, "Can you do 15 minutes and bring people?" And I was like, "I've done 7 open mics." I was like, "Okay," and I ended up doing 18 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I was improvising a lot. I did well. I brought like 20 people to this little room and got paid $6. And I did a couple more of those shows for that guy before I learned. But Matt told me, he said he remembers that show. And he remembers, I guess, texting you and was like, there's this fat white dude named Aaron that's really good.
Yeah.
Like this new kid. And I remember him telling me that. And I was like, oh, I want to meet Terry Jones. And I remember the first time I saw you, I was like, oh, Terry is dope. Like, he's so good. But it's funny how we grow together and things like that.
Yeah, definitely.
But here's the thing. Like, I like talking about, you know, how you got started. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Grown Dad Business. I mean, you have a new baby.
Yes. Which is awesome.
Who is adorable.
Thank you.
And also, this is an adorable comment. Don't ever brush her hair ever.
I love the fro, man.
Some of the pictures you have of her with her little hair fro is so adorable.
Thank you.
She is like a baby doll. It's so cute. I've showed my wife. I'm like, look at this hair. Look how cute this is.
I try not to, man, because it reminds me of Huey from Boondocks. So I always try to keep her like fro out.
And
now it's so long that it goes everywhere. My girl's like, we can't just leave it out. I'm like, come on, we got to leave the fro out.
That's hilarious. Well, before we get on to dad stuff, when did you start? How did you start doing stand-up?
I started when I was 18.
Yeah, you were young.
And I had came to the Pittsburgh Improv to do an open mic. So what happened was, like, one thing I always talk about is, and I don't mind talking about it, you know, is I have depression.
Right.
But like when I was young, I didn't know that's what I had.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just would go through stuff.
Sure.
And was like, oh, I think this is just normal.
Right.
Like sit in the dark and listen to Nerd all day. That's not normal. So what ended up happening was my dad bought this box set of Richard Pryor. And it was every single album, including his unreleased tracks. I burned them all on an MP3 CD. Okay. This is how long back it was.
Right.
Because, you know, iPods wasn't out yet. So it's an MP3 CD player.
Oh,
I put every single album on there, and I would listen to it at night before going to bed.
Right.
And I laugh, and I was like, yo, it amazes me that a man can talk and change your whole mood from, you know, this negative dark spot to one of the happiest places you could ever be in your life.
Right.
And you're just laughing. You feel good.
Right.
And I was like, yo, I'm sure I want to do this. Because my aunt was a stand-up comic
as
a kid.
Oh, I do remember you telling me that.
Yeah, my aunt. And we had a couple bookers that booked me that used to book her back in the day.
Wow.
Like in Ohio and, you know, Maryland and stuff like that.
What's your aunt's name?
Cookie. Cookie Jones.
She went by Cookie Jones.
Yeah. And she was a she was around like during the Def Jam era and stuff.
Wow,
and
early '90s.
Yeah, early '90s, mid '90s. I think she stopped around '98.
Wow.
But you know, I had a lot of influence around me, so I was like, I gotta try.
Yeah.
So I tried it. I'll never forget my first outfit I had on stage.
Oh my God!
I looked like an R&B singer. Like I looked like I was a member of Drew Hill. I had on.
He said Drew Hill.
Drew Hill. I gotta send you a picture of this outfit.
The fifth member of Blackstreet.
Yeah. Yo, I no diggity. But it was like I had some boots on with like these Pepe jeans, okay? With a blazer, like a black blazer with a button up and a fedora type hat and braids, okay? I went in there I'm so fly, man. I'm gonna mix the old school with the new school.
You look like an extra from Harlem Nights.
Bro, I did, man. I look crazy. And everyone.
Well, at first, you see that you kind of like that flashy, you know.
Yeah.
Just like anybody that joins a band, you know, all of a sudden change your attire.
Yeah. And I couldn't help it, yo. Because, you know, when you think of comedy, you don't realize the steps that go into comedy.
Oh, yeah.
You just think you're going to go one night, kill it, and then everyone's going to take you on the road. You're going to be on Comedy Central, HBO in like a year.
Uh-huh.
Like, you have these fantasies in your head that don't make no damn sense.
Right.
But. So that was me. I was this 18-year-old kid, and I went up. And I was like, 5 minutes, man. That ain't enough time. I'm going to go up there and kill it. And I thought it was Jay-Z. Like, I thought I'm going to be like Jay-Z. So I didn't write material. I had, like, these bullet points.
Yeah,
I mean, now we could do bullet points.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
At that time, you know, it's like you need to write out your material. So I did it, and I didn't get through, like, the full 5 minutes.
Right.
And I was just like, hey, how's everyone doing? And they're like, oh, he's cute. He's 18.
Doing crowd work at 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
And I did a lot of impressions. That's what saved me
when
I was new. And then I just kept going. There was a couple Next Generation people, like, who I came up with, like Jeff Conkle.
Right.
Matt Mulchin. I ran into Jesse Joyce the other day. We did a show together.
Yeah.
And Jesse was actually a judge during one of the contests I was in. Like, we were just talking about that. But it's just funny when you see, like, an evolution.
Yeah, sure.
And you go through these different phases of who you want to be in stand-up.
Sure.
So I was, like, doing political comedy for a while. Then I went into, like, a character. Then I went into urban comedy with no punchlines.
Oh, that's when I started. I was, like, a black comic.
Oh, yeah, was, man.
People still make fun of me.
About that.
People, like, you, T-Row. T-Row makes fun of me all the time.
I make fun of you because you was a DJ at one of the most hood bars.
I was.
In one of the worst hoods ever in this city.
If anybody knows, I was a DJ at the Phase 2 in Homewood. Sonny, holler at your boy. And people thought I was Nick Nice.
Yeah, they definitely
And
did.
Also, a little side note, I DJed Terry's prom.
Yo, that's the weirdest.
Because when you told
degrees.
Me when you graduated, I was like, oh, I DJed that prom.
Yo, like, you know how there's the 6 degrees? That's
so
crazy, bro.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It was 2005, right?
Yeah, I graduated Penn Hills prom.
Dude, I DJed that prom.
And he DJed our prom. I remember pictures with you as a DJ.
They got to have some of them.
Yo, ain't you Nick Nice?
Dude, when I would do proms... During those couple years, I'd be like, no, Nick Nice is like 60.
Yo, he is.
He's a lot older.
But he was the only like white DJ.
I know.
And he's like, he was 60 with hood.
See, here's the thing. Like that kind of thing was kind of part of me. And just going back on what you were saying is like when I started comedy like that, and I've said this quite a few times on the podcast, is that like when I started being funny, all I knew was in Living Color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved, you know, Saturday Night Live, but I just loved In Living Color. I was very attracted to black comedy because all around me, I was trying to kind of get along in a neighborhood and a school where it was a very mixed school. You know what I mean? And you know, some of the black kids are hard to get along with.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. You know, they go through some tough things.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was my in, was humor.
Yeah.
And so that's why I really gravitated towards black comedy because it kind of like when you it and I feel like a lot of the themes in black comedy is grown up, you know, hard, things like that, and being a victim of abuse and you know, moving around a lot. I kind of attached to that. I kind of identified with that a lot.
Yeah,
like I have a lot more in common with you guys than some of my friends. You know, that I had a lot more in common with some of the kids in school than I knew.
Definitely.
And that's why I gravitated towards that. Because you hear, you know, comedians talk about being poor and like, and I'm like, you know, they don't have no dad. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. Like, that's me, you know? This is kind of where it came from. And when I started, that's all I knew. Because I did the same thing. I recorded Martin Lawrence on HBO with my scrambler.
That's the first stand-up I've ever seen, by the way. Yes. And it traumatized me.
And I'll tell you what, I VHS taped it.
Yeah.
And it was only the audio. Because the scrambler would not work for HBO. So I, no joke, would play a VHS tape with just Martin Lawrence is talking shit. And also his, oh my gosh.
You So Crazy?
No. Yeah, it is You So Crazy.
You So Crazy, yeah.
But I loved him. And then early on, I looked recently, is that like Martin Lawrence comes out of me in my first year or two.
Oh, yeah.
Like I can see his influences in me. Mm-hmm. And I just got a picture today. I'm going to post it for Throwback Thursday. today, actually, of me. It was like the 2010. And I got huge baggy jeans on and a black t-shirt and a backwards Kangoy. I wore that for 3 years. That's so funny.
Yo, that's hilarious. It's funny. Yo, I used to wear backwards fitted hats. And, I would go on stage crazy until a comedy legend from around here, and people know him all around, mm-hmm. Billy Elmer, was like, take the hat off. You got to change your look. You know how many of you there are? It's in the comedy clubs. They're not going to book you. And I was like, all right, you're right. So went by my real name and just kept going doing comedy ever since. I did take a break for a little bit because I was having some, like, personal issues in my life with, like, drinking and depression.
Right, you talk about that on stage a lot.
Yeah, I do. And I think when I came back from that, I talked about it on stage, and I didn't know if I would be okay doing it.
Right.
I had like talked to some friends first, and they were like, well, are you comfortable with doing it? And I was like, yeah, I think I'll be okay. And we did a roast of a buddy of ours. He's good friends with you, Danny Palumbo.
Oh yeah, we did the Danny Palumbo roast. Yeah.
And I didn't have like anything prepared.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, hey, come out.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. And that was like one of the
I remember that
because
we wanted like hitters on it. We wanted to like have a lot of fun.
Yeah. And the jokes, I was just like, yo, I gotta like come back hard because there was like all these jokes. I'll never forget. Derek Minto had this joke where he said, hey, he's like, there was a lot of talk about Terry Jones, and he hasn't been around lately. So what, when Obama got in office, you just decided to quit? And I was like, shit, I got to come back. So, it helped, though, that time off. And it helped me, like, as a comic, to be able to talk about stuff that I want to now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, totally for me. I mean, people ask why you do comedy, and I'm like, because I'm selfish. I like the attention.
Yeah.
It's something
that... At least you're being honest, though.
Yeah.
That's an honesty.
I mean, I tell people all the time that, you know, it feels good. It makes me feel good. It's my therapy. It's my drug. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it is.
It really is a drug, man.
Oh, dude. I tell people all the time, like, I think the longest I've gone without being on stage, I think is 10 days in the last 7 years.
Wow.
And it made me nuts.
Miserable.
Like, I'm telling my wife, I'm like, I got to get on stage. I'm going to lose my mind. Like, this is, it's making me crazy.
And some people don't understand that.
No, you don't understand.
They can't get it because we have a certain mentality. Like, we are Randy Ram from The Wrestler. Like, when he gives that speech at the end, like, no one's going to tell me I'm done until it's you guys. And, like, this dude has a heart attack giving a Ram Jam.
Yeah.
And that's what I always think of with comedy.
That's
what I mean? Like, any comedian, I'm like, yo, we are The Wrestler.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're looking at Randy Ram, and you're like, yo, you don't know anything. Like, you can meet... Seinfeld said something where he was talking about... He has a family.
Yeah.
That he's known for years.
Mm-hmm.
His wife, his kids, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But he can meet a comic that's only been knowing comedy for, like, 3 months, talk to him for 5 minutes, and have more relatable stuff than his family.
Sure.
And it's not disrespect to people we love. It's just that... It's kind of like superheroes, if you think about it.
Well,
you
have to. It's really easy to talk to people that know what you're going through.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Comedians are like, you know, oh yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get along very well, very easily.
We could tap into the material. We could tap into jokes. We could tap into personal stuff.
Oh, yeah, traveling and all the stuff we deal with. And a lot of comedians, our relationships are very similar.
Yes,
you know, whether it's dating, mm-hmm. marriage. I mean, I talk to a lot of comedians mm-hmm. about marriage and having kids. And, like, even comedians that I meet, younger comics on the road or festivals, it's like they're messaging me, like, you know, hey, man, we're having a baby. I'm having a tough time, you know, dealing with being on the road. Like, how do you make it work?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that's kind of part of my ministry now. It's like I talk to young comics that are, you know, married yeah. or start having kids, and they're like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, your wife's got to be awesome, and I got the best one, so. I mean, but yeah. no, really, it's a lot of that stuff.
No, you did. I mean, that's one thing that you were blessed with, man. You have an amazing wife.
Ugh,
she's very nice.
She's amazing.
Beautiful woman.
She's so amazing. I look at her, I'm like, I can't believe she had three kids. I tell her all the time, I'm like, I can't believe you're my woman. Like, yeah. you are my wife. This is crazy. I don't deserve
smiling.
It. She's
Every
wonderful.
Every time I see her, she's smiling. And the kids are beautiful.
And my kids are awesome.
Little fire cat.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Luke the Nuke and Becca the Professor. they all got and one names.
And one.
Yeah, that's what I tell everybody.
Like, they're going to be on street yeah. hoops. That yeah. is hilarious. And one names.
Yeah.
Yo, and only you would come up with that reference.
Yeah, that's my kid. I gave my kids and one names.
I bet you told someone, like a white dude, that, and he was just like, oh,
someone what do you just mean? Said
What's
to
and
me.
One?
Yeah, someone just said to me in Chicago was like, I was talking about giving my kids nicknames. He's like, oh, like and one? I was like, yeah. It was a black
like,
dude, though.
One?
It was a black
yeah,
dude.
I knew it was a black dude.
Exactly. And I was like,
like,
and I was
one?
Like, yes, exactly.
Yo, half man, half amazing.
Yeah, yes.
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce. Yep.
Spider.
High Tower? No. There's a bunch of them.
They had a crazy
There was a dude from my high school, actually, that was actually in one of my jokes. And I can't remember his and one name. He was very short lived, but he's from Still Valley. And
oh,
was
wow.
and I dude, no joke, I'm watching and one videos one day, like in college.
Yeah.
This is like 2003.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm
wow,
like
big.
What the I was like, that's Jim Bercy. I was like, he was very good in high school.
Yeah.
You know, just didn't have the grades, you know, to mm-hmm. go to big colleges, you know, but I think he played college, and this must have been right after college, or he might have done 2 or 3 years of college. And I can't, for the life of me now, I can't remember his and one name because I want to look it up again.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. But no, like I nickname my kids, and I know, you know, you have fun with your daughter.
Yes.
Because my kids are cartoon characters. You know what I mean?
Yo, that's a good way of explaining
oh,
children.
Oh, my son is a cartoon yeah. character.
Oh, yeah.
Like someone drew him and invented him. Like
yeah.
he's such a goofball. But it's fun that like, it's fun that, and I don't do as many like characters and voices as you do on stage.
Yeah.
But like, that's the fun thing about it. And that's something that you are like pretty known for is mm-hmm. you have some really great impressions.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
I mean, like some of the impressions that I've heard you do, I've only heard, I've always said like Jay Farrow do mm-hmm. them as good.
Yeah.
And that's a compliment. I
yeah,
mean, that's true.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
I mean, like, you know.
Which we came up on YouTube around the same time.
Yeah.
And we were the only guys doing 50 Cent impressions. So one
oh,
day,
yeah.
I get a phone call.
Yeah.
And it's, quote, I'm doing air quotes yeah. here, 50 Cent cussing me out about doing an impression of him. And I'm like, yo, who is playing on my phone?
That's so funny.
I get a phone call back, and it's Jay Farrow, like, yo, man, you shouldn't be leaving your phone number on the internet for booking, right? He's like, yo, what's going on? And then, like, we just hit it off.
That's crazy.
And then, like, so I pranked him as Eddie Murphy when he mm-hmm. got SNL.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, it just became like that
That's
thing.
Hilarious.
But it was funny. But, no, I appreciate it, man. I love
yeah.
the impressions. It's,
well,
it's
and it's
fun.
And it's cool because, like, you were involved in a short-lived, like, radio show.
Yeah.
Where, and I know I was really excited because Jim Krenn, a Pittsburgh radio legend, I remember... and this is like a small sliver of kind of how this happened. I know you guys talked about it a lot. But I remember talking to Jimmy when he was starting a radio show. And he's like, you know, I want to have a radio show that's kind of like Saturday Night Live and, mm-hmm. and you know, have people do characters and voices. And I remember talking to Jimmy and I go, well, you know Terry Jones, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's – and he goes, yeah. And it was funny because the day I was talking to him, he was coming to Pleasure Bar. Or no, you were at my Comedy Sauce show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every Monday in Pittsburgh at Pleasure Bar in Bloomfield, I do Comedy Sauce.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh Comedy Showcase. You were on that, and I go, come hang out and chat with Terry.
Yeah.
So Jimmy came to Comedy Sauce that night. I know you guys hit it off, and then you did a show together.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
Like you guys hooked up at a show, and then that was it. And then how was that for being? I mean, you guys were only on for a year. Radio is a hard business. You know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, whatever happened happens. You know, it's very, you know, whatever. Who cares? But what I'm saying is, how exciting was it for a short time? I mean, I know I was really excited because I'm like, you get an outlet to do characters and voices and write sketches,
yeah,
like in real entertainment. Mm-hmm. And sure, like we do it on YouTube, and you have some, dude, hilarious parody videos.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Your Panther.
Oh, yeah, the Black
Panther. Go look up. By the way, I'm not, because we're friends, or I'm not trying to, I played that over and over in my car on YouTube when I was driving the one day and just repeated it, because it was like hypnotizingly funny.
Ah, good look.
I don't know how to, that's the best way I can put it.
I tried to make it as nerdy as possible for like comic fans, because there's so many references in there. There's one where I talk about like Doombots trying to take over.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. But it's a cross between that song Panda and Black Panther and Coming to America.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like all this nerddom just smashed together. And I'm like, this is so ridiculous.
Oh, thanks, man.
But like, it had to have been fun. Like I said, obviously, you do it on stage, you do it on YouTube and stuff. But it's like now it's like a big morning show.
Yeah.
And you get to do characters. I mean, how was that experience? That's fun.
It was
especially
fun
with a legend like Jim Crenn.
Yeah, it was fun, man. The one thing I'll say is he taught me a lot, and about like putting the characters together.
Right.
Because my mind usually moves faster than I can write.
Sure.
Sometimes, and that's an issue where that's why I like performing.
Yeah.
More than writing a
right,
lot of
right.
Like I can write for people, but when I write for myself, it's difficult.
I know.
So.
I could sit there if a headliner's like, "Hey, could you listen to my set and punch it up?"
Yeah,
I will come out with a book. I'm like, "Here, you have 48 jokes. I've punched up all 45 and added 9 jokes for you." It's so easy to punch up somebody else.
It is. So, he was doing that for me well, because there were certain impressions that he couldn't do that I could, and he was like, "Oh, I think this would be great."
Right.
So he would write these like really good skits.
Right.
And the one thing about him is he's a brilliant writer, and he's been in the game for a long time, so he knows what he's talking about. So he would write up these skits, and I would just do them, and then I would come up with a concept, and we would write together on a lot of skits. So like Samuel Jackson cooking show, it's Dessert Mother, and then it has the bleep, and then we had Morgan and Morgan, Attorneys at Law, or Freeman and Freeman. I'm sorry, it's Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, yeah.
Morgan Freeman, just little stuff like that was like so dumb that it was funny.
Well, I remember I did write with him for a little bit. I think before it was all before the radio show.
Yeah.
It's when he did his Byam show, and I sat on his back porch for like 6 weeks helping him punch up some stuff when he was writing that joke about his dogs having celebrity voices. And I remember I was like, this is so silly and hilarious. And I remember helping punch him up with that and working on his Byam show and stuff. And what's great about it is when you work with someone like that who just totally like an improv term, but yes ands you because he completely gets what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like he's like, oh, yeah. And yep, boom. And you're like, yep. And like, it just, he's really great at working like that.
Yeah. So that aspect of, unfortunately, there were some issues at the radio station, but
sure.
With the actual skit writing and stuff, because we even did it for the podcast, and that was an idea I had where he was
the
like,
No Restrictions podcast.
And he was like, yo, I want to come up with these skits for it. And I was like, look, I have an idea. We make it like it's radio on a podcast,
right?
Because that's what you're used to,
right?
We riff it up, we have the stories ready, but we pretend that the skits are sponsors.
Oh, right,
so
right, right.
That's why, like, it was like, hey, here's our sponsor. Check out this TV show, and
right,
people loved it because there's not many podcasts that do that anymore.
No.
So there's a.
I think that like I mean like, Comedy Bang Bang kind of does stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think National Lampoon's still has
which
like a podcast that does stuff like that.
And they're great for that.
Yeah.
So, it was unique because you have all these podcasts where, some of them are like 4 and 5 hours of people just talking.
Yeah.
And that's no jab at anyone. I love a lot of the podcasts, like Rogan, Mark Maron, and stuff. Right. But, you know, I think a lot of times they talk about some really awesome stuff, and then there's also some comedy involved. But, like, this was a pure comedy podcast where it was just comedy. And we'd have some serious moments, but I enjoyed the skits to kind of, like, throw off that and just, you know.
And it was it's just cool now that, like, you know, you're off the radio show, but you went right into, like, okay, I'm doing this new album called Limbo Negro.
Yes.
Which some white people are like, what the fuck? What does that mean? I kind of get it. Yeah. I kind of get it because I understand you. I know you enough. But I'll just say again, tonight, August 11th, 10 p.m. at the Pittsburgh Improv, he's headlining. And then Sunday, 7 p.m., August 14th at the Pittsburgh Improv, you're recording your new album, Limbo Negro.
Limbo Negro, yes. Yeah. This album I've been wanting to work on for maybe about 5 years.
Yeah.
And I just never had an opportunity.
Sure.
Then once I did the podcast and got on radio, it was like, you know, your schedule, you're stuck there.
Yeah.
So where I was transitioning to go work with bookers that book on a road.
Right.
It's like, yo, we'll talk to you in 2017 instead. Right. And, you know, I'm like, okay, that's good timing.
Right.
And I could get this stuff done.
Right.
There's a lot of projects I didn't get a chance to finish, so now I can go into my own.
Sure,
thing.
Yeah.
Limbo Negro, the whole history of it is that in America, there's considered two types of Negro.
Mm.
You're either a good Negro or a bad Negro.
Mm.
So when people hear that, you know, if someone's listening and you're not black, you're thinking, oh, a bad Negro would be somebody that's a bad guy, like a criminal.
Yeah.
A good Negro is somebody who's an upstanding citizen.
Right.
But it's actually a weird definition. The good Negro is actually someone like Stacey Dash, who's on Fox News all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Bashing, you know, black movements and stuff. You know, going against our culture.
Right.
A bad Negro is someone who stands up for the culture.
Who's challenging that status quo that's basically written out by white men.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
like, this is how you should be behaving.
This is how I'm going to live my life.
Right.
So, you know, we were joking about it, but, like, a bad Negro would be someone like Dick Gregory.
Comedic genius,
but he's so political.
Or someone like Paul Mooney. Or even Richard Pryor. Absolutely.
Richard Pryor, I would consider probably the first, public Limbo Negro.
Yeah, you're right.
I would say. And the only reason I say this is because when Cosby came out, Richard Pryor was clean like Cosby, and they had the same.
But Cosby has always been the good Negro.
Yes. And the crazy thing about it is he's really a limbo because he was militant off stage. But what people were upset about is they're like, okay, you're making all this money, and he was doing like charitable work and all this great stuff. But they're like, can you help us publicly? So he would speak about black culture in the negative spots.
Right.
But people were like, go on stage and say something. And where Pryor was considered a civil rights leader because he was going on stage, he was using the N-word and taking the word from white people.
So
back then they were offended. They're like, yo, who's this black dude using our word?
Oh, yeah. He talked about cop, police,
everything. You know, but he also walked that fine line. So like the definition of Limbo Negro that I came up with was, it's somebody that you meet, because you know me.
Sure.
You know I love comic books. I love nerdy stuff. So, and I went to a good school. I'm educated. So when I talk, people are like, oh, he's one of those good Negroes. Yes, he'll just do what we say.
Yeah.
And then, like, something happens with police brutality or something dealing with our culture being, like, destroyed or attacked. And I speak up, and people are like, whoa, wait a second. We didn't know you had an opinion.
That's so interesting you say that, because I just had a conversation with a comic about accents.
Yeah.
Like you're saying the way you talk, right?
Yeah.
So, and we were talking about, and it was a very enlightening conversation because someone was saying like, when a white guy's talking like or a black guy's talking like a white guy.
Yeah.
And like, I sometimes see that from the lens of like a black man where I'm like, so what you're saying is someone with a good vocabulary is white. And cannot be black.
Absolutely.
And then, because it turned around and someone said, oh, sometimes you talk black on stage. And I was like, no, that's not what it is. What it is, it's class.
Mm-hmm.
All it is class.
It's all class. And people don't get that.
It's not black white. Mm-hmm. Because there are white dudes, like I can turn my 1998 accent right back on.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So It's class. It's the environment that I lived in.
Yep.
A low class neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
It's, and I equated it to exactly English accents. There are two major English accents, mm-hmm. and that's British RP
yep.
and Cockney. Yep. Is the difference black and white? No.
No.
It's class.
It is. Absolutely.
So when, and you do that voice, you know what I'm talking about? Do you, yeah. like, oh, it's ain't all white then? Yeah, it's ain't all white. Like, that's, that dude's black or white.
Yo, you have no idea. Like,
you
know
what I'm
saying? Idris
Elba? Yeah.
And Idris is talking.
Oh,
like,
my God. When he talks Cockney?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And, it's know, real gangster. It scares me.
It's really. So, you know.
What did he do that? When did he do that? He did that.
Like,
well,
in a
well,
movie?
He does like that on Luther sometimes. He gets real angry.
Yeah. Well, it was that.
What am I thinking of?
Oh, crap. There was another movie he was in. Did you ever see Takers?
No.
He was in that with T.I. and
yeah.
Like,
oh, when I saw him in The Wire, I was like, I can't believe he's English.
Yo, he said
that
it would freak
mind.
People out because he'd be like, they'd be like, yo, what up, Stringer Bell?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, hey, how you doing?
I know.
And he'd be like, yo, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You're right.
But
it is
but
class,
yeah,
bro.
I just, it is. And
a great example of that in comedy, Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
Bill Hicks is one of my favorite comedians of all time. If you know comedy and you study and you pay attention to Bill Hicks, you can tell that Richard Pryor was one of his biggest influences.
Hmm.
Now, keep in mind, Bill Hicks comes from the South and was a child preacher.
Right,
just like Kenison, just like Roseanne.
Yep.
They have like a specific way.
Right.
And like Chris Rock was influenced by Sam Kinison because of that preaching thing. So when you look at Bill Hicks... Bill Hicks goes on stage and the way he talks, you would be like, yo, like in the 80s, you'd be like, yo, he's kind of talking black a little bit.
Yeah, right.
But it was really that this is just a dude that was a product of his environment.
Right, absolutely.
And, you know, that's what people don't understand. And like you said, it is class.
But yes.
Because of how closed-minded the country is, it's we switch it to a race situation.
Yeah.
So growing up as a kid, I would like Star Wars when I would come from Penn Hills to Garfield and they'd be like, oh, you white. Oh, you acting white. Oh, you white, dog.
Right.
Oh, you white. Oh, you. And so I had like a leather penguins jacket. They're like, yo, that jacket's hard, but you white, yo. And so my cover, the album cover, is me as a kid in a leather jacket with cowboy boots on a Big Wheel.
Oh, my God.
In Garfield. And
it's hilarious.
With a box fade.
I love it.
And it's because like when I had those cowboy boots on, they made fun of me.
I remember you
so
talking
bad.
About the cowboy boots.
But it's like, yo, to me, I thought it was cool. Like my dad, like Clint Eastwood.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, you know, that was like my whole life was really like walking in between those worlds and seeing both sides of the world. So that's why I came up with that limbo.
I can totally, I love it and I can totally relate. And I know when you came up with that name, I was like, I get it. I totally get it.
Well, you would.
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
You would definitely get it.
I'm kind of a limbo white guy. I'm a limbo Anglo-Saxon. I get it. I like walking in both worlds. And it's funny, too, because one other point on that just about, like, accents and class is that, well, people will say, and this is when I really shut them down, because then they'll be like, no, that's a black accent. And I'm like, well, I mean, sure, the majority of people that talk like that are black because in the last 80 years, the systematic racism of white men and the government and business have pushed them into low-income neighborhoods. But anyway, what's your point?
That's real shit, my man.
You know what I mean?
Man.
I mean, so then they're like, oh, but... I'm like, yeah, because that's what happened.
Yo, it's crazy because there's all these situations that's been going on in America with race.
Yeah.
And then I get people that hop on my social media and they try and attack me about me standing up for it. But the thing is, like, I had this one thing where they attacked Justin Timberlake for being inspired by Jesse Williams. Now, here's my thing with Justin Timberlake. I don't have a problem with Justin Timberlake being a musician the way he is.
Right.
When people say that you're mocking the culture or taking over the culture, the problem is like you'll get like black dudes to be like, yo, I'm gonna give you the black card. Here, take the black card.
Yeah.
Like they don't finance it, they don't lease it.
Right.
You know, you're not renting it. They're just like, you black now, you black.
Right.
So he's around all these black people and he's like, oh, okay, I guess it's just cool to do stuff.
Right.
So what people get upset about is when something bad does happen dealing with black culture, someone like Justin Timberlake isn't standing up.
Right.
Now, Macklemore actually has been saying stuff. He's like the only dude.
Right.
But it's usually like these people attacking
the culture.
And I
can understand that.
So I posted something, a story about Justin Timberlake doing that. Some guy comes on like, oh, well, I guess so. Does that mean Lenny Kravitz can't do rock and roll then since he's black? And then
it's a good point.
And then here was my argument.
It's a good point. Well, I know. Yeah.
My argument was
the first rock and roll musician was a black woman.
Yeah.
She blended gospel with rock.
Yeah.
And then rock and roll was created in a bunch of black community. I mean, we're talking Fats Domino.
Oh, yeah.
Chuck Berry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lil Richard. So rock and roll was created in the black community.
Yeah.
So I had when I gave him the history.
What you need to be doing is hating on Elvis.
Yeah, for real.
Who straight up took black people's songs.
like my man, what's his name? Took Lil Richard songs all the time.
Oh.
I forget the dude's name. Old singer. He'd be like, Tutti Frutti, oh Rudy.
Robert Goulet?
No. Close enough.
Doop, doop, doop. That's Domino. Robert Goulet.
But, that's hilarious. But, like, that's the thing. You know, and I start sending him these links, and all these people just start, like, teaching him history.
Right.
And all he could do was, like, shut up.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, well, I'm sorry. We actually took that, too.
Right.
So it's like, you can't say that he's doing Slash is black.
Right, right.
You know
right.
what I mean? This is a black man doing rock. And everyone's like, oh, well, how could he do that?
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
But when is it a point where it's like, this is for everyone?
Yeah, I think
there's got to be something like that where, like, white people aren't allowed to do this. Well, I mean, you don't want to be like that.
No,
you don't. I mean,
I don't think I understand
the thinking of it. Mm-hmm. I understand. I don't think Justin Timberlake had any ill will towards that at all. I think,
no.
You know, I mean, he obviously, you know.
He don't know any better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that.
In that situation.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and I didn't think he said anything like that was like too. It just kind of triggered some people.
It did.
I understand that. But, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know. It's hard because it's me sitting here thinking, like, I want everyone to be different and to celebrate diversity, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I want everyone to be one people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes some people, it scares me. I'm like, no, don't, like, you're different, but you're not. Like, we're all human beings. You know what I mean? We're all, like, just children of God. That's what I think, you know? So it's kind of weird. Like, no, don't, like, you know, like I don't want you to like go move away from us or something like that, or you know what I mean? Like we're gonna start like communities and like no,
they'd be separate.
Even though, well, they kind of are sometimes,
but
I don't want that. You know what I mean?
I think you can blend the cultures. I think it's the difference is as long as the person respects the culture.
Sure.
Versus, you know, like when you look at Iggy Azalea and people are upset with her.
Right.
It was a situation of a girl coming from Australia and doing a New York accent.
Oh,
like
I know.
Like Lil' Kim. But she didn't understand where the culture and the history comes from.
Right.
So
it was almost like an opposite of like blackface soft shoe.
Yes.
It was.
I'm with you on that. Look at like my favorite rapper, Eminem.
Yeah.
Eminem, at the end of the day, I don't care if he's white. The dude spits ridiculous lyrics. Like, I never heard anyone do wordplay with Batman as much as this dude does.
And
it's the idea that it's a respect to the culture. He says it.
Right.
His boys say it.
And I've said this before too, and then we'll move on. We're getting too deep. but that's fine. I love this. This might be a 2-part podcast. I don't know. We haven't even talked about your family and your child yet. But no, one of the things I have talks with comedians all the time where they'll say, hey, you do really well in front of black audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, it's just, I've been around black people my whole life. Like, yeah. I don't know. I know how to make people laugh.
Yeah.
That includes black people. Like, it's just, you know, and they're like, yeah, but you know, you could tell you're from somewhere or something like that. I'm like, yeah. And the thing is when you have that authenticity, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think that, and this is coming from Guy Tori told me this, is like, he said, black people know that you know black people.
Yeah, you could tell.
Like, because when a white comic goes up there and tries to, like, you know, quote, black it up, they know they're faking.
Oh, yeah, you could tell.
And you know what I mean? And that's a good point. And I'm like, okay, well, I never thought of it that way. But yeah, that's true.
Remember, did you see the what was it, Opie and Anthony, where they roasted Rick Voss for being on Def Jam?
No.
Oh, my God. I'm going to send you the YouTube link.
No.
But they roast him for being on Def Jam and are making fun of his jokes, talking about how, you know, he was trying so hard to, like, be on Def Jam and blend in, and which he's a brilliant. I think he's a really good comic, but, you know, when you had those situations, it's you can tell the difference.
Right.
You can tell who's really real and who's not. And I knew from meeting you that you were real, not because you were at the phase or because you had white tennis shoes on, but...
That's one of the funniest stories of all time. Yeah,
yes.
You did I tell that story?
Oh, yeah. You told me. That's why I mentioned it.
Where when I was DJing at the phase, these two black dudes are sitting there and they go, he's a cop. I'm telling you, he's a cop. And the other dude goes, nah, he's got white kicks on.
Yeah.
If he was a cop, he would have those black Applebee shoes on.
It's true, though.
That is so funny.
It's true.
Like, if you get it, because undercover cops wear those, like, all restaurant. Black, yeah. like, food runner shoes.
Yes, they do. And because when we were kids... They were coming up undercover to yes. find out who was selling kids firecrackers. And it was the Asian store, the corner store.
Yeah, yeah.
And both of them, actually, in Garfield. So they were grabbing up kids. And someone was like, yo, that's 5-0. He's like, no, it ain't. He's like, yes, it is. Look at his shoes. Yeah. His shoes. He got black shoes on. Yeah. And then he gripped them up. Like,
he's got orderly shoes yeah. on.
So, that's you hilarious. Know, you could tell the difference. And I think the thing is, you know, like I'm really big into Eastern philosophy and mm-hmm. Asian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I also have a respect for the culture. You know, I'm not going right. to go trying to, like, deny my culture and be like, yo, I'm Asian
sure,
now.
Right, right.
And I think that's what happens a lot of times. You know, it's pretty painful when you see somebody emulating your culture. And then, like, when the Klan comes... You're standing there like, yo, you got my back, right? And you look to the right and they gone like a cartoon character.
That's true.
And you're by yourself. So that's what it feels like a lot of times when you have these situations that are happening right. in the black community where we're like, yo, because I get people to say like,
I know what you mean. You know. So it's really, and I understand where people are coming from with the Justin Timberlake thing, and especially the, what's her face?
Iggy.
Yeah. Was that it's like white people poaching these good things from black people, but then not. Having their back as friends or a people.
As a people. Absolutely.
Right. And I completely understand that. You know, for me to be like, oh, like someone to say like, oh, you like Wu-Tang. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, you have a right to.
But like, but I would have my brother's back. Like always. Because I don't care, black, white, whatever. We're people.
Yeah.
You know absolutely. What I mean? Like, and that's that.
One of the coolest moments I ever had where... Because sometimes I've had, like, some, you know, I mean, you've been at these shows.
Sure.
I've had some funky stuff said to me after mm-hmm. shows, like racial stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were at, after a show, me and Bill Crawford were at, we were at Primanti's in Oakland.
Yeah. Okay?
And this guy comes up, and all we hear is vinegar. And we go, what? Vinegar. And I'm like, yo, what? So Crawford's like, yo, did he just say that? He's like, vinegar, vinegar, vinegar. I need the vinegar. He was talking about vinegar. But, like, our minds were, like, on the same page.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
like, yo, was he saying the N-word? And, you know, Crawford was about to jump on him. And I was like, yo. Like,
he almost fought somebody over some fries
over
and vinegar.
Over some vinegar. Because it sounded too much like the N-word. So it was, like, one of those moments where it's like, yo, like, this is a dude who, you know, he grew up. And,
yeah, yeah.
and went to city oh, yeah, schools yeah, yeah. And all the hood dudes yeah, yeah, know yeah. him. So it was cool, like, seeing somebody who actually does have your back
yeah,
versus,
yeah.
you know, I've had people not have my back.
Mm.
And, you know, so that's the respect of the culture and respecting
right.
as a people.
Absolutely.
And that's when you could tell somebody has a real good human heart versus
right.
people who are just out
sure.
and
absolutely.
Mischievous, you know.
Absolutely. So where people can find you, where at? Online?
You can find me online. Everything's at T Jones POC. Twitter.
T Jones POC. That's an old name, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's an old.
Because every time I type it in on like Twitter or yeah. Instagram, it kind of giggles a little bit. Because it was Terry Jones, Prince of Comedy.
Yes, yes.
That was when you had a Def Jam name.
Yo, T Jones. It was T. Jones, Prince of Comedy. And I come out, and I was a teen, and I'm like, yeah, everybody, how you doing? No punchlines. But like, yeah, nope. you ever go to the house, and you take a dump, right? Yeah, right? Take
my mom dump. Is crazy.
Dump dumps be crazy. And then everybody goes nuts for no reason. Yeah.
So T. Jones, POC, P-O-C.
Yeah, T. Jones, P-O-C.
Dot
on
com,
Twitter,
on
Instagram,
and everything. Yeah.
Facebook,
yeah.
MySpace.
yep.
My website is teamterry.tv.
Oh, yeah, teamterry.tv.
Yeah, and YouTube, same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
POC. Yeah.
Well, this is Grown Dad Business, and we didn't much get into your family or your child, so I'm going to have you back.
Yes, definitely.
Because this was a really good talk.
It was a good talk. And, you know, if anything, being I'm on Grown Dad Business, I just try to make life better for my daughter.
Absolutely.
And, you know, just try to fight to, you know, make this a better place for my daughter, especially racially and everything
yeah.
going
how
on.
How much does that kick you in the ass having a kid? Because I tell people when I took acting and comedy seriously, mm-hmm. like in 2008,
yeah.
and then my wife's pregnant, and I'm like, oh, I got to provide for another person. That's why, because people are saying, how did you get so far so fast? And I'm like, well, you have a little baby you got to feed.
Yeah,
that kicks you in the ass.
The thing with my daughter, man, her being born was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Mm.
And, you know, I was in a really dark place, like suicidal and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, I got new bits about suicide and depression from,
right.
like, Limbo Negro. But having my daughter actually saved my life. Like, I remember when she was born and walking over and she was crying.
Yeah.
And she stopped crying and opened her eyes. And I was just like,
right.
this is ridiculous. You know
yeah,
what I
yeah.
mean? And like you fall in love with somebody that you never knew before.
Yeah.
Like that fast.
Oh, yeah. And it's amazing.
So, you know, it doesn't kick me in the ass. It actually motivates me, not necessarily for.
Well, that's what I mean.
You know,
that's,
comedy.
That's what I mean.
But it motivates me to live.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, not, you know, I'm saying like just speaking wise, like business wise.
Oh, yeah.
Like comedy career. But you're absolutely right. Dude. Yeah. Having children, when you know that you have another person mm-hmm. watching your behavior,
yeah.
it makes you a better man.
Yeah.
It makes you a better parent, a better person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It absolutely does.
And they love you.
Yeah.
You don't understand why they love you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it kind of bothers you.
Well, it's just this unconditional love.
And it bothers you a little bit because like if you're somebody that's used to it but not used to it, or if you're going through something personally,
right.
you're like, yo, why is this child love me so much? Like, I don't get it. And they do. You know, every morning my daughter walks around the corner, runs up to me, smiles, and, like, hugs me.
Yeah.
But when she hugs me, she, like, pats my chest because I pat her back.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's just like she reminds me every day, like, yo, we need you here.
Yeah.
We love you, Dad. And,
yeah, it's amazing.
So business-wise, I'm actually kind of happy that I had a kid now.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm 29, mm-hmm. and if I would have had her, like, when I was 25 or something, then I would be,
right.
like, a little worried. But, like, I at least have things
you
have on a resume.
Of time to mature.
Mature
yeah.
and everything. And, you know, comedically make some connections with people
sure.
that I need. And
sure.
get in the right direction. Whereas, like, if I did it early on and
yeah.
then was trying to, like, you know, make
yeah.
those connections and network and stuff, it'd be a
yeah.
nightmare. But
well, I know, and there's something I've noticed about you just thinking about myself in that you're pretty private about your fiance.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Gonna be.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
We're gonna be married.
Yeah, I have so many comedian friends that aren't married that have kids. It's pretty much your wife.
Pretty much,
you
yeah.
know. But you're pretty private about her and your child,
mm-hmm.
and because you're on social media a lot, and so am I.
Yeah,
and so I see that where like my kids are like have their own hashtags.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I am very careful. Like, trust me, like I'm not putting like my kid's school district on there
for sure, for sure.
You know, certain things, but because I know some people are like, oh, you shouldn't put your kids on there very much.
Yeah,
and you know, but I try to do it where it's just part of my life. It's part of the funny things that happen all day.
Absolutely.
So, but for you, it's not really, you don't really put it out there very much.
I look at, like I, on Facebook, it's easy to share my daughter because, you know, you could just keep it within friends and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the idea of like, you see these kids becoming memes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's not memes you made.
Well, I've made
it's
memes
like,
of my kids.
You made memes of your kids.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah,
but,
right.
you know, somebody taking a picture of Luke the Nuke and making
yeah,
a meme out of
right.
it would drive you kind of insane
right.
a little bit, even
I
if
know
it
you
was
mean.
Funny.
Oh, yeah.
But it's
absolutely.
Like, oh, you just took my kid. So
that's why if I ever do something like that, I put, like, you know, my hat, Mike, put, like, my Aaron Kleiber on there and stuff
yeah.
like that, like a watermark almost.
And you have to because
yeah.
it's the only way to protect them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm private about it because I kind of look at entertainment like being a superhero. Because,
oh,
you
right.
know, You're who
I
you
think
are.
You've said that before,
yeah. And then, like, off your private life, you're Peter Parker, Clark Kent, whoever you want to be.
Right.
But the thing is, I kind of look at it where I noticed that people who are mischievous and evil
yeah.
try to go for the people you love.
Mm.
And
sure.
entertainment, it feels like
sure.
you're Spider-Man. Like, they grab Gwen
yeah.
Stacy or Jason Todd if you're Batman.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, yo, what is going on? But
you are,
I mean,
nerdy.
You've had these issues where like people said some disrespectful stuff.
Well, I had to make my Facebook private because
we know why.
Yeah, I mean, I had to make my Facebook private because, you know, it's in something all of a sudden someone's like, you know, your pregnant wife looked good as hell. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Like straight disrespectful.
Yeah, and then it's like some dude that was at a show in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, are you for real? I had to make it private. And so if you can't friend me on Facebook, I apologize. Yeah. Because the bad apples ruined it for you.
For real.
I got a fan page. It'll tell you everything you need to know. You don't need to know what my kids look like on Christmas morning.
Right.
Go to my fan page.
And that's how I felt about it. You know, right. I've had people say some stuff in the past that caused issues. And I know myself, you know, where I go from, you know, I go straight to Stringer Bell in a minute.
Yeah,
you know
what
I'm saying?
Right.
Where I'm like, okay, well, I got to find this dude.
Yeah.
So to prevent all that, you know, I just try to keep it private and protect my family.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I do feel bad sometimes where I put my kids out there. And but then I'm like, you know what? It's just it's sharing this life. And it's kind of a lot of what I do on stage now. Like, I mean,
for you, yeah. Because you are the family guy.
Yeah, but I mean, I think people like seeing that little journey, you know, with me. It's almost like an accompaniment to my stand-up on stage.
Yes.
You know what
absolutely.
I mean? Absolutely. I know you've talked a little bit about having a baby. How does that change your material? I ask all the comedians about this. Like,
you know what?
Because I know it, for me, it blew my mind. Like, once I had my...
great parent material.
But like, once I had my second one... I wasn't doing it until I had my second, until my son was born, and then we had two, and I was like, whoa.
Dude, the material you
like, we had a two-year-old and a newborn?
Amazing.
Oh, it was crazy.
Your stuff is amazing. You're talking about, like, being a parent, and you had
that's all
these
I know.
In-depth stuff.
That's all I know.
But it's a great thing for you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And,
ow.
It
just hit my finger on the table.
Dude, don't die.
Sorry.
It has, like, changed my material a little bit where I'm starting to talk about, you know, parents. And
sure.
My woman has a daughter already.
Right.
Who's 7, and she lives with us. So it's like, you know, her doing
so you're like
crazy
also
stuff.
Kind of a stepdad, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got an interesting situation.
Yeah, so her being, like, mischievous on stuff.
Right.
And the little one running around now, you know, there's a ton of material. Right. And it does change, man, because you want to talk about it. You're, like, proud of it.
Absolutely. And then you notice, too, like, how people connect with you. Because no matter, even if people don't have kids, people like what I say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because they have a mom. They have a dad. They have maybe nieces and nephews. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you're right. Funny is funny. But, you know, it is super relatable.
It is. It's like when you talk about relationships, when you talk about sex, when you talk about, you know, money, whatever it is, if you break it down in the right way, you know, people are going to relate to it.
Right.
So for me, I talk about a lot of, like, I had a lady come up to me the other week and she was concerned about me because of, like, some of the material, like the new stuff I was doing. And she's like, don't let the darkness take over your life. And I was like, no, I'm good. That's why I come on stage and we laugh about it together. But I take people on a journey with my family. Like, I tell the story of, you know, my evolution as a person. And then I get to, like, hey, I have a kid now, and this is the things that I do. So it kind of makes people feel good and, like, they're rooting for you.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, man, this dude's been through it, and he's happy. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow. Well, man, I appreciate it.
No, thank you for having
me. I'm finally glad we can, dude, with our schedules, it's crazy.
We've been trying to do this for...
Oh, like a month and a half, at least.
Maybe longer than that.
You're no,
like,
I've...
Hey, Grown Dad Business, you were doing, like, this was...
No, you know what? I mean, you are on my list, like, of people to have on for a long time. So I'm really excited.
It's just a matter of me making that baby.
I know, yeah. That really helped. I was like, oh, he's a dad. I really got to get him on now. But no, tonight, I keep saying August 11th, Thursday, 10 p.m., Pittsburgh Improv. Sunday, 7 p.m., August 14th, Pittsburgh Improv. Doing your new album, Limbo Negro.
Limbo Negro, yes. Yeah. Should be fun. So everyone come out, have fun, get a laugh.
Yeah.
Let's laugh together and in harmony.
Follow T Jones POC, T Jones POC on everything. TeamTerry.tv.
Yes.
You're on YouTube. All that. Yes. Go watch his Panther video.
Panther.
Oh, my God. All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Amen.
All right. We'll be right back.
you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.